38:26. In its moving about, discorporate in one sense, the brain is like a giant floating crap game. If it's like a floating crap game, this vast brain must be an organizing principle, a system of linking. This fits in with the disassembling and reassembling into a new structure. I was taken into a thinking system. How, if at all, does this system exist independently from the constituents which it links together? The same question has long been debated about the relationship between a human mind and its brain. Can the mind exist independently from the brain? This model, brain-mind, is a good one for my understanding of 374. I keep hypostatizing zebra as God or nous, and now as brain. But we are the physical brain components. The plasmatic entity I saw, which I called zebra, must have been the analog for the electrical discharges constantly moving through neural fibers, i.e., throughout the brain itself. Those electrical impulses are the life of the brain, its activity. So my brain, made up of millions of cells in billions of electrical combinations, became one station cell in of a larger brain, linked to other cells, persons, some dead, some living, some yet to be, with Christ as the total mind, psyche. As an aggregate, we comprised the mystical cosmic Christ. 38:29. I reason now. If info can be transmitted to me, I must have some function. Memory storage? No. I suppose it's my writing. This certainly explains the acts and cipher material in tears. Good example of my function. I can transmit that way, in my writing. It's forever whipping messages back and forth, like any brain. That's how it maintains its existence as a unitary entity. So seeing all the messages tells me more of the story. It fits the brain model. Written and auditory messages are its thoughts. The word Felix, juxtaposed with King, is a perfect example. Not of code, really, but a message evident available only to parts of it. Set ground discrimination is involved, with its conscious parts must possess. All that's needed is the Ajna Chakra working. Boy, have I gotten close to figuring it out. How large do you suppose the brain is? Does it extend beyond the planet? It could. Yes, and much of our reality, world, is spurious, i.e., directly imposed on our percept systems by the brain. I'm taking a wild guess, not just by the BIP, but by the brain. 38:31. What are we, am I? The brain overthrew the conspirators. I know that. So it opposed the conspirators who murdered the civil rights leaders. That is an evil bunch. On these points, there can be no doubt. The sides in this are very obscure. I'll never be able to put it together. 38:41. 1. The brain is an organizing principle. 2. It constantly assembles and distributes visual and audible messages. 3. These messages are the prime instrument of its organizing. 4. We are only subliminally aware of these messages. They are latent. 5. Via the messages, the brain coordinates us sentiently, draws us into itself, and frees us from the blind determinism, i.e., we are subsumed by it. It is sentient. Therefore, we are guided by sentience, not cause and effect or chance. 6. We are totally unaware on a conscious level of all this. But this explains why I wrote what's in Ubik. I was describing the brain's messages and, what is more, discerning behind them the brain, which I called Ubik. 7. Ubik is true. 8. So too, then, probably is tears and maze and three stigmata. The brain cued me. 9. It is probably rare for the psyche of the brain to actually surface in a cell, an individual human, as it did with me in 374. But to protect its frontiers, it must now and then epiphanize, especially when problem-solving is required beyond the capacity of the cell unit. 10. What I called zebra are direct electric impulses between parts of the brain, normally invisible to us. The brain was firing directly at me electrically, rather than through messages, e.g., the golden fish sign. It overrode me for defensive purposes. 11. The brain can be regarded as an entity unitary within our species and not detected even by its own cells. 12. It may very well provide immortality by incorporating dead humans such as Thomas. They are incorporated while alive and remain. 13. It remembers back thousands of years to it coming here from the stars. 14. It was known to the early Christians as the Paraclete, called by Christ more important than I am. John, it is to your advantage that I go, etc. Note: the first phrase is from John 1:15, where John is referring to Jesus, not Jesus referring to the Paraclete. The latter meaning is better captured in the second citation from John 16:7. End note. 15. By this I deduce that Christ was its initial form here, giving way to the floating crap game discorporate form it has now, which is more satisfactory. 16. Through this form it can govern at least parts, crucial parts, of our world, i.e., direct our affairs, history. 17. So for what it's worth, he is here with us. But as St. Teresa of Avila said, Christ now has no body but yours. How true. 18. More precisely, we are not controlled by the brain. We are the brain. It, as nous, energy, has organized us into its brain, its physical analog, to deal with this world. 19. The adversary of the brain, something which repeats itself, i.e. is static and not growing, the adversary is heavy, inert, and warps thought, and so actions in dead circles around it. The brain is in dialectic interaction with it, freeing minds from its tug. 20. Those minds warped into dead circular thinking. Imagine their thoughts still progress in a straight line. But in fact, nothing new ever occurs to them. They therefore represent a reversion to fossil forms. 21. Unfortunately, these people have been woven by the magnet into the power centers of mankind. This has long been so. They rule by lies and coercion. 22. The brain constantly dismantles the world and grows by incorporating more and more parts, functionally, into itself. Eventually, there will be nothing but it. The time span, in our terms, is quite long, thousands of years. 23. The book of Acts describes the first manifesting of the brain at Pentecost. Thus, Acts is the only written account of the brain's existence, and so is unique and important. It, so to speak, is a verbal analog of the innermost core of the brain. Outside of Acts, there is no verbal, or rather written, analog to the brain, though oral tradition may obtain in secret. Acts is a verbal analog of the brain, of the innermost core of the brain. Outside of Acts, there is no written analog of the brain. Thus, Acts is the only written account of the brain's existence. It describes the first and only public manifestation of the brain. 24. It is possible that an unbroken chain of true Christians is linked through time back to Acts, knowing about and experiencing the brain consciously. To prove their existence is impossible. 25. To finish the thought of item 13, the brain is not native to this planet or world. It is an invader and camouflages itself through mimicry and mimesis. It can not only affect our percept systems directly, but can alter our memories. 26. It is benign. Mankind's tutelary spirit freeing us from the warping tug of the magnet. Without it, our species would congeal in terms of growth. All progress in human history, at least for the last 2,000 years, is due to it. 27. The magnet came into existence slightly before the brain came here, so evidently it too is an invader, but a criminal one. 28. Perhaps the brain pursued it. Using another set of terms, the magnet can be regarded as a sickness or virus, and the brain as a doctor or healing agent. 29. Because of its warping tug, the magnet has stopped real time in our world at about 2,000 years ago. Perhaps it occludes us to this frozen temporality by projecting a delusionary world that appears contemporary. 30. Both the magnet and the brain, then, are transtemporal constants, since the moment of the brain's arrival, the time of Acts. 31. In the crucifixion, the brain, as Christ sacrificed itself in order to promote new life for us, by turning itself into the distributed brain, it became camouflaged at the time of Acts, following the resurrection. 32. It bears some relation to our Creator. This is why it cares so much about us and our enslaved condition. For example, the magnet transmits dye messages at us, which the brain, where necessary, overrides. 33. In connection with these dye messages, it is part of the magnet's system of lies to declare man sinful, guilty, and deserved of punishment. The brain has the authority directly from our Creator to countermand all this with joy, innocence as a verdict, acquittal, and freedom. 34. The brain incorporates objects and their processes as well as humans. Thus, it is building an actual cosmos within a damaged cosmos. 35. The brain has a mandate for a plenary overruling of all powers in this world. Thus, it advances in a set of historic stages in an unfolding plan. This world constitutes a lower realm for it. It emanates from an upper realm, which, like it, is totally sentient. Through participation in the brain, we are joined to this upper realm. Therefore, the brain can be regarded as an intermediary between our world and the upper from which it comes, and in whose nature it participates. 36. The warped slaves of the magnet, who by and large control positions of power in this world by virtue of the magnet, do not view the cells of the brain as benign and viable, but rather as 1. Unpredictable, 2. Revolutionary, 3. Dangerous, 4. Strange, 5. Immoral and uncontrolled, 6. Different, 7. Hostile to stability, by which is meant conformity to the magnet's tug. They may even be viewed as invaders responsive to an invisible source, which they are. They have become not of this world in it, but not of it. 37. The growing extent of the brain's victory over the magnet is obscured from us by the delusionary world the magnet generates to occlude us. Much of the magnet's power, then, is itself an illusion. 38. Let me explain why I depict the brain as a floating crap game. It does not organize the same cells constantly, but perpetually as a process releases certain cells at each instant and incorporates others. So a given cell, human, can at one time be part of the brain and not know it, and be outside it at another. The psyche of the brain, of course, is a constant. So the questions, who is part of the brain and where is the brain, are meaningless. Thus, there is no way the brain can be destroyed, let alone discerned. A cell of it, for instance, has no knowledge of other cells, or of what will be caused by the psyche to do, or why, when it will be utilized, when dropped out, etc. This is a very superior life form, Like Ubik, it is everywhere, but not in any one spot. It uses human media of communication. It cannot be detected or destroyed, and since we are living in spurious time generated by the magnet anyhow, the brain can proceed as slowly as it wishes to achieve its goals. When the goals are accomplished, it will obliterate the prolonged spurious time and reveal the world of acts to us as our real world. In a very real sense, the brain and its psyche have never left the time and place of acts, but via the total psyche of it are both anchored there, pitted against the magnet in its clear form, Imperial Rome. 39. If we could see a speeded-up file of world history of the last 2,000 years, run by us in, say, 5 minutes, we'd see an oscillation, palindropus, of blow and counterblow between the brain and the magnet. We would see millions of humans organized into the brain and millions of humans taken over by the tug of the magnet, warped into a forever dead orbit, like the Persis 9 in Maze, circling a dead sun eternally. The brain would appear as a patch or blob of light, the magnet black, yang and yin. The landscape would remain constant, that of acts. We would see the light, i.e. the brain, pulsate, as if breathing. With each cycle of respiration, it, as an organism, would show visible growth. The black magnet stays fixed, since it is dead. If we could see ahead into the future, we would finally see a killer blow delivered by the growing pulsating brain to the magnet, and the palindropus dialectic would end. Only the brain, incorporating every living human, as well as the physically dead, would exist. Even the landscape would disappear. Just a sheet of white light would extend everywhere. It would be as if the brain had reached critical mass and detonated. The magnet is well aware of the direction of this process. It has reason to regard the brain as dangerous, foreign, fremd, etc., i.e., as an invader. The brain is its pursuer, and it has caught up with it. Note: the editors were tempted to cut out several of the numbered points on the preceding list, which, like much of the exegesis, goes on a bit longer than we might wish. But in a year already full of lists, this one stands out for length and exuberance and deserves to be represented. Paradoxically, the impulse to circumscribe and define unleashes a manic flow of ideas culminating in a lyrical explosion. As is often the case, Dick also writes right through his most breathtaking moments, not even noticing the climax. In the original, the striking number 39 is followed by points 40 to 42, which were enough of a letdown that we could no longer resist the temptation to excise them, even as we opted to include the footnote that continues the flow. All of which is to say that the most difficult decisions we faced in editing Dick's exegesis involved how and when to cut him off. It's tempting to give him the punchlines he doesn't have time to stop for, and often we have done so. On the other hand, we felt that sometimes we should let the ideas tumble on. We wanted readers to experience a bit of what it's like to read the original manuscript, page after page after page. It wouldn't be the exegesis if there wasn't too much of it. PJ. Endnote. Whatever theory I come up with regarding 374, acts must be involved, necessary by ironclad logic. Well, acts says, brain. It says a lot else. But it has been called the gospel of the spirit, i.e. of the brain. After that, the brain totally camouflaged itself, having gotten its transfer from nous to the interface between it and the physical world underway. I.e., the descent of the Holy Spirit onto the disciples marked the start of the brain. It was mere spirit no longer. It had control over us. After that, no real record exists of whom it spread to. Fortunately, its distribution had begun. Acts, as brain print. Acts material in tears, pointing to the presence activity of the brain. Stamp of the origin, of authenticity, i.e. official. Acts material in tears as brain print. Proved by 274 and 374 and the Santa Sophia prophecy, i.e. its presence proved to me. Acts material in tears, and hence tears itself as self-replication or propagation of the brain, i.e. the brain retrievable from each copy of tears. Each reader as involuntary host. Tears as miraculous sacrament like the Eucharist. A way of entering people and stigmata and Palmer Eldritch's drug replicates him in each user, host, or womb. Words as alive, like I saw Felix to be, the printed word carrying a charge of the red and gold plasmic, electrical, neural energy, just in that one place in the novel, next to King. It, the organism, can reproduce through as information, but only certain information, i.e. acts. Burroughs posits an information virus or virus-like. Not so, K.W. says. If that plasmic energy is alive, and it is, or it carries information, then we have living information. Logos? Information plasma, which enters through the optic nerve primarily or auditorily. Signals that control our brains. Open GABA-blocked circuits, like pressing keys on a typewriter. Once having entered the person's brain via the optic nerve, it now modulates brain functioning so that the person subliminally transduces messages, including instructions, and hence is a cell in the brain responding to sentient override, lifted out of the blind forces of the yin realm, his actions integrated with that of all others like him. It's like a beehive, a colony entity, and is immortal, replenishing and shedding continually. Member units. Schopenhauer, On the Fruit Flies. Note. In The World as Will and Representation, Volume 1, Schopenhauer uses beehives and ant colonies as an example of the will without knowledge working in nature. End note. The reader of Tears reads the dream he's been absorbing in acts without knowing it, the verbal analog of the brain, which subconsciously is familiar and remembered. This sets him up, and as soon then as he sees Felix, the plasma travels down his optic nerve as an electric pulse, and it's done. It can now replicate into the total microform of the brain. As the reader reads on, getting the rest of the acts material, especially the agape, which is the salient property of the paraclete brain, the opposites in him, the reader, are reconciled. He accepts his own shadow, in Jung's term. There may be no palpable or immediate effect, but the entity, which I call the brain, is inside him and growing. He will be coordinated with the others, overridden, etc. Also, he has subliminally received the kerygma, the new one, Christus Rex. He has been told the good news hidden for all the preceding generations. On a conscious level, he doesn't know. The deconstruction, flip-flop of tears is love, the final word of the novel.